Hi, this is Kevin Thompson, director of Random House Audio's Star Wars Recordings. What you're about to hear is a special collaboration between author Timothy Zahn, editor Betsy Mitchell, and myself to bring alive their all-new commentary for the 20th anniversary edition of Star Wars: Heir to the Empire. Now, in preparation for this anniversary edition, Timothy and Betsy both revisited the book and annotated it with their thoughts and history of the book. Coinciding with the release of this book, for the first time, Random House Audio recorded the complete and unabridged text for Heir to the Empire. This program takes excerpts from that recording and follows each one with Timothy or Betsy reading their commentary. We hope you enjoy it.
Chapter 1.
Captain Pelion!
A voice called down the port side crew pit through the hum of background conversation.
Message from the sentry line. The scout ships have just come out of light speed.
Pelion, leaning over the shoulder of the man at the Chimera's bridge engineering monitor, ignored the shout.
Each of the three classic Star Wars movies includes a Star Destroyer in its opening scene. All of my Rebellion era books do the same.
Pelion let the silence hang in the air for a handful of heartbeats, long enough for those nearest to notice.
"This is not a cattle market in Shom Hai, Lieutenant Tichelle,"
he said at last, keeping his voice calm but icy cold.
"This is the bridge of an Imperial Star Destroyer. Routine information is not, repeat, not simply shouted in the general direction of its intended recipient. Is that clear?"
Tichelle swallowed.
"Yes, sir."
Pelion held his eyes a few seconds longer, then lowered his head in a slight nod.
I wanted to set up the fleet as having suffered during the chaos and retreat of the years since Endor, slipping back from the generally efficient war machine shown in the movies to something less polished. Lieutenant Tichelle was an example of the eager but inexperienced crew that the Empire now had to whip into fighting shape, contrasting with the old-school competence and tradition of Captain Pelion.
Slowly, Pelion let his eyes sweep across the bridge, feeling the echoes of old anger and hatred twist through his stomach. There had been many commanders in the fleet, he knew, who had seen the Emperor's original Death Star as a blatant attempt to bring the Empire's vast military power more tightly under his direct control, just as he'd already done with the Empire's political power.
The Grand Admirals were to be part of this same overall plan, an extra layer put in at the top of the military command, its members appointed by and answerable only to the Emperor.
Quick line to promotion, which meant that when the executor died, so also did a disproportionate fraction of the best young and mid-level officers and crewers. The fleet had never recovered from that fiasco.
Later, after the 501st Legion fan group began, it was also established that Vader similarly liked to grab the Empire's best stormtroopers and add them to his personal legion. I got to play with that idea a bit in later books.
They pushed back until they were here. Here, in what had once been the backwater of the Empire, with barely a quarter of its former system still under nominal Imperial control. Here, aboard a Star Destroyer manned almost...
When Heir to the Empire first came out, I got a few questions about how this fit with the celebrations we saw at the end of Return of the Jedi. My answer was that those were spontaneous shows of relief and defiance by the galaxy's ordinary citizens, but that the Empire's military was far from defeated. In fact, it would be 10 more years of Star Wars time until Vision of the Future, when the war with the Empire would finally end.
Aboard a Star Destroyer manned almost entirely by painstakingly trained but badly inexperienced young people, many of them conscripted from their homeworlds by force or threat of force. Here, under the command of
I don't see Thrawn as the type to use unwilling conscripts. Clearly this was something other Imperial leaders had initiated before his return.
The public would soon discover. He glanced at his watch. 2:15. Grand Admiral Thrawn would be meditating in his command room now, and if Imperial procedure frowned on shouting.
I wanted Heir to the Empire's villain to be a military leader as opposed to a governor, Moff, or Sith. But a normal admiral seemed too commonplace, hence the Grand Admirals. I first ran across the title, by the way, in connection with the German Navy in William L. Shirer's The Rise and Fall of the Third Reich.